3. Of course, I didn't sleep, not that first night. The ship was full of strange sounds coming from deep below me, articles of cargo shifting in the hold, or the scantling creaking, the planks of the hull making sudden eerie snaps, a knock once or twice from below the waterline as if the ship were already nudging it through the ice it was strengthened for. They bend, these ships. They stretch and bend and twist with the pressures of water and air. I have been told there is not a solid join among them. They are merely timbers bound with tallow and caulking tar. I thought about my fellow passengers and wondered how each of them had come to be on this journey. Bletchley, with his gung-ho confidence, his popinjay clothes, and that occasional glimpse of something dubious in his eyes. I have often made mistakes reading a man like him. Such men carve out new identities for themselves each day. He had been revealing at supper, so enthusiastic about his guns, his steadiness of aim, and ruthlessness of killing, then oddly childlike and uneasy when his companion was mentioned. And still we hadn't seen her, even though she was in a cabin a few feet away in some state of illness or reclusion. The first mate, French, had been interested in her, or interested in gossiping about her. Yes, leaping Mr. French, playing games with his shadow. That was another man I was reluctant to trust. He had a mocking air which might be his nature or might be practiced. It amounted to the same. And his crude joke concerning cannibalism was not in keeping with the manner of a gentleman. I resolved to keep my distance from him, and also Talbot, of whom, frankly, I was afraid. The slightest provocation, and he might throw a man...